truth thou hast for me. Open mine eyes, illumine me. Spirit divine, love of my life.
Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and that was a song called The Song of the Soul by Chris Williamson, and that's sort of what we'll be talking tonight, the song of the soul, which is the motivation behind creativity, art, inspiration. It's the soul that's coming forth to sing its song in the world. I have two very interesting artists, creative people in that realm, Ron and Victoria Friedman. And Victoria is going to be talking with me first about a beautiful new book that she just created called Spirit Doodles, which is spirit doodling, which is another level of creating from a sense of no mind. And after Victoria, I'll be talking to Ron Friedman, who's also a very amazing creative person, about his poetry. So first we'll be talking here to Victoria. Welcome.
Thank you, Alan. So, always great to be with you.
I know. It's always fun to do a new show on New Realities. If you've been listening to the show for the past few years, you know that I've interviewed Ron and Victoria about their Vistar organization, the Vistar Foundation, which is a kind of group of creative people coming together to create performances, poetry, art, and in a new kind of way, in a kind of way of a collective consciousness. But tonight we'll be talking about this book that Victoria just put together, Spirit Doodling, The Effortless Expression of No Mind. And you know, we all doodle, but I think what Victoria has done with this book is capture the essence of that that drive behind doodling. And she says it comes from an enlightened place. Tell me what you mean about no mind.
Okay, well, before I say that, Alan, I just want to say, because today is a very special day, because it's January 25th, and it's the birthday of my spiritual mentor, Kenneth Mills, who actually started me on the path of finding the source. And I would say he was the consummate example of a spontaneous outpouring of creativity from the source. And just being around him is what really made me more aware that that was within me. So I wanted to say that first about that before we continue.
So he was your inspiration for finding your own art in a way, your own voice?
He was an inspiration for finding the fact that we are an unlimited source of creativity, that within us we are that, and that it is within us and ready to come out spontaneously without effort. And he directed my attention to that. It's not like it wasn't there in me, but he certainly caught my attention by his example and directed me toward that.
And one more thing about him is that he himself was an incredibly inspired artist. Like, he was a musician, a poet, an extemporaneous speaker.
Exactly.
And so being around him did what for you? I mean, what did you say it did for you?
Well, I began to see, I saw a person living from a standpoint where everything flowed. There was no thinking. There was no amount, no torture, no kind of considering all different angles. Things seemed to flow, whether it was music, whether it was singing, whether it was incredible metaphysical lectures on the non-dual standpoint done in poetry. It seemed to come spontaneously, although he was a very disciplined man. So as he said that practice does not make perfection, but allows perfection to be revealed.
Well, that's an interesting point. He was disciplined yet spontaneous. It's so,
exactly. I know.
How do you reconcile the two? I mean, you.
I know. I think all the discipline was preparation for the spontaneity.
So you like do your homework, you do your practice, and then you're out there just letting it flow through you. I mean,
As I said, I think it made it possible for that spontaneity to be revealed. It didn't create it. It's not like if we practice and practice, we will find that. Right. But the practice was set in place. So when that force was allowed to be expressed, it had a vehicle tuned in to what the expression could be.
Mm. Well, the same thing that happens in doodling is the sense that, you know, there's nothing planned out. There's nothing to prepare. It's total spontaneity. You're in the moment with, I'm sure most people doodle, but you've equated it to a kind of awakening state. How do you do that?
Yes. Well, anybody who's listening who has doodled, my God, you probably doodle a lot. Some people have doodled all their lives. I was like an insane doodler. My mother complained about it because I would doodle on all sorts of things that I shouldn't have been writing on because I wasn't aware of it, that I was doing it. And so I've always done that, and I think people do that many times. For me, I would just throw them out, or I would rewrite my notes. Like if I doodled on a piece of paper, a laundry list or a shopping list, mm-hmm. I would have to rewrite it because it would be all over and it would be feel like it was messy. So basically, I wasn't really attentive or aware that something was going on. I was just doing something that I wasn't valuing in any way. And maybe some people actually, you know, I've done a lot of research on this, and they say that children are really reprimanded for that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're told they're wasting time, they're not paying attention, that, you know, they're daydreaming. But it turns out that that is not the case. And what happened to me was I was actually still doodling till about 2 years ago, just kind of, you know, insensitively, I would say. And then one day I was listening to Eckhart Tolle and Oprah mm-hmm. on their, you know, the conference on the internet. I don't know if anybody has listened to that. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're a doodler, whenever you're listening to anything, and if you're listening now, you should just pick up a pen and try to doodle a little bit. Just take a piece of paper. And listen to me and don't even look down mm-hmm. and just let your pen flow. Well, that's what was happening with the Oprah and Eckhart Tolle event. And then one day, I think from the heightened awareness of that conversation, I looked down and I said, what is this?
Mm.
I just said, what am I doing? Where is it coming from? It's beautiful. I like it. I want to do it. You know, am I not paying attention? Am I not paying attention to Eckhart Tolle and Oprah? That cannot be, because I love what they're talking about.
Because you are paying attention on one level of your mind. And
because I love what they're talking about, mm-hmm. because it's so impelling to me. So that's when I began to like take my attention and put it into, where is this coming from, that question.
I think that's a great question. And it's no mind, but in a way there's also another part of us, because I love doodling. I've been doodling since I was 10 or since I could pick up a pen. But really formally, I remember in chemistry class in the 11th grade, I do these incredible designs on the desk.
On the desk?
Right on the desk at 10. But I was listening, but it's like there's two parts of us. There's the part that's listening and the part that's creating these designs that is coming from, I guess you can call it a no-mind state, but your big question is, where is that coming from? Mm-hmm. And what did you come up with? Where is it mm-hmm. coming from?
Well, one thing I know, it is not coming from my reasoning mind. Mm. Because very often when this is happening, my mind is occupied. And that's a very important thing, that the mind can get occupied with a lecture or listening to music or conversation. It's as if the mind is tuned in somewhere else. It's listening to something. And by the way, they've done studies, and children who doodle hear 30% more of lectures.
Really?
They are more creative people, and they are better problem solvers.
Well, so, what's going on?
Well, that's such an interesting point, because I write about that in my book, because, see, the research that they have done, it's really, they are looking at the material results. They are looking at, how much better is the brain? How much more do we hear? Mm-hmm. How much more do we retain of some material information? Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, how much we can mm-hmm. give back.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about that is so obvious to me is that, you know, if you touch the no mind state, which is a dimension that is infinite,
right?
It's huge. It's so big. It's like there's no space in it. It's emptiness. When that's touched, of course, the material things will get a little better. They will. They'll improve to some degree, because you are now touching a source of unbelievable creativity and power. However, they keep looking at the results in the material world, whereas, you know, they could be looking at the source of it, which what we're talking about. Maybe I'm calling it a no-mind dimension, an empty field.
It's a no-mind space. It's a space beyond our personality. We're not thinking about this. It's coming out of us from a deeper place beyond the personality even.
Yes, like where is it coming from? If we're not looking and we doodle something and we look down suddenly and we crumble up the paper because we've made designs all over the paper. By the way, I want to tell you, you should see Leonardo da Vinci's doodles.
Really?
Oh, my God. And you should see they kept all the president's doodles. President of the United States, they doodled
There's
all over.
There's a book of president's
doodles?
Yes, really?
Very interesting.
Huh.
So, I mean, this is something that's been going on. And so most people don't even know what they did because they throw it out. They don't look at it.
And
so so you can tell that they are not consciously doing that. They're not deliberately, I couldn't say consciously, they're not aware that they're doing it. That's something they're doing that is coming from a different realm.
Maybe it's something to do with the synesthesia quality, the blending of the senses where we're drawing or creating with our hands while we're listening. It sort of is emerging. And like you said, it goes in deeper because we're sort of not a passive listener. We're not just sitting there listening. We're doing something. We're activating another part of our brain as we take in the information, as if I always felt like, especially in chemistry class, like I was recording in these abstract forms what I was hearing, but in a sort of language that was incomprehensible.
Very interesting. Perhaps that I just, you know, I think all these things would be worth exploring. That's why, I mean, this is my first exploration into, you know, spirit doodling.
Right.
And I mean, I think people like you have to take it and see what, you know, what more could come from it. I can tell you a number of things, though, that was I found that are totally amazing. For example, you know, as an artist, because I was an artist.
Right.
So when you're an artist with your mind, or if you're a writer with your mind, or if you're anybody with your mind, you're constantly making judgments. You're constantly comparing, judging, assessing, correlating.
Right.
That's what the mind is doing, and that's fine. These doodles, when we're spirit doodling, when I'm spirit doodling, there is a place where that has stopped. That is the mind. When I hear that, I can hear that. Like I can hear my critical mind, but I do pay no attention to it. I don't try to get rid of it. Because there's no point trying to get rid of it, because I'm going to doodle whatever's going to come out.
Right.
So I just let it, put it aside.
So there's no critical mind when you're doodling?
No.
That's
absolutely nothing. There's no. You can hear it. Now, if you go with it, if you start doodling and you hear something like, you look down and you say, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You can bet that's a critical mind. The minute, and I have put that aside, I go, I don't engage it, and I don't validate it. So I just let it be, and then I continue doodling. Guess what?
What
I thought was, what the mind just told me was awful and ugly, turns out to be the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen.
Right.
There is no critical state that has no preferences. The state has no preferences. There is no such thing.
But you know, another big point that you make in this beautiful book that you put together with Ellen Mann, you know, Spirit Doodling.
Oh, by the way, our connection is through Kenneth Mills.
Yes.
She was with him for 30 years, and she is really completely versed in the high standpoint of metaphysics. And so this book was a labor of love.
But what's the website for this book?
www.spirit.spiritdoodling.com.
Spirit.spiritdoodling.com. So there's two spirits in there?
www.spiritdoodling.com.
Oh, spiritdoodling.com. Well, the thing I was saying is the point you make in the book is that it's not about the finished product. It's the process of the doodling that seems to be the most valuable point, right? It's. I mean, in the end, of course, they're beautiful pictures, but it's who we were while we're doing that that I think changes us or opens us up to a spiritual level. That's sort of what I get.
Exactly. And you know what? It's so exciting because I cannot tell you how it's such a lesson for ourselves not to be so involved with results. See, everybody in art is involved with results. And the minute I started spirit doodling, people came over and said, oh, that's not doodling, that's art, which we can talk about.
Right.
And you know what? It's such a temptation. People look at the doodles and they go, oh, that's so beautiful. And it is beautiful. However, more beautiful
Yeah.
Much more beautiful. The doodle will go away. The doodle will be burnt up.
The doodle will fade.
The doodle will fade. The doodle will be torn. The doodle will be burned.
Uh-huh.
But and the wheel will be gone. But the state where it comes from is never gone. And, you know, it's always there.
The state we come from is never gone.
The state where the doodling comes from. The place, the dimension where doodling flows out of is never gone.
You know, you make it so immediate. It's like we think enlightenment or that place of no mind is something we have to work for and meditate for and do mantras. And you're just saying, just pick up a pen and just start creating. And we gain that state of awareness that we've been told is so elusive.
Yes, I think the only thing that stands in the way is the mind.
Because
it's so much easier to see. It's so hard for us to see in everyday life how our mind really judges and compares and makes decisions and creates all this havoc around us. But when we're spirit doodling, you can hear it. Like all of a sudden they'll say, oh, God, why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that line shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is the end. It's just like, what do you mean? Absolutely, that is not. I would never believe that in spirit doodling. And then you just continue. All I keep saying is to people, continue doodling and see what happens. Because eventually that mind gets quiet. Eventually, it just quiets down. And there's an incredible sense of relaxation, I have to say. Incredible sense of relaxation. I think it's a meditation like anything else. I think the heart rate slows down. You know, breathing slows down. Everything gets quiet.
Would you say you would recommend this instead of meditation?
I wouldn't recommend anything instead of meditation. I wouldn't do that. But, I mean, I just think it's a very creative thing to have a little. We're going to do a little journal. And you could have it near you, and then, you know, you could, if something is listening to something, or even if things get a little tough, let me tell you something. One thing that emerged, I was doing this book over the last year, and my mother, who's 98 years old, she's in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm. A very amazing woman, yes.
Incredible woman. And it's very torturous because she's somewhat blind, and she's pretty blind, and she can't hear well, and she's still very alert, and so it's very hard. She's very frustrated. You know, she's very angry at situation, and so I would go there and be with her. It was hard. You know, she has to take it out on someone. We tend to take things out on people close to us. I understand that. So I'd be there, and I'd say, I can't stand this. And then one day, I brought my doodles, and I started doodling there. But I have to say, most of my doodles were done there. And then it's as if I could settle in, like I could listen to her, like something was coming through that was still, that didn't have to. Just the turmoil began to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of healing. I think has a very tremendous healing potential emotionally. I think it heals the emotions. I think it settles down emotions. It's as if you go into the zone, you know, this quiet zone.
So is the book a sort of guide? Let's say, I'm sure there are people maybe who've never allowed themselves to do it. Would you say the book can guide people to that state? Or, I mean, it's nothing anyone could teach in a way. It's not like you're saying make this line or do this. You're saying, like, how would someone actually, if there is anyone out there who's never done that, how would they actually allow themselves to do something so abstract?
Mm-hmm.
Is there not a formula, but what would you tell people? How do you tell them to just create without knowing, you know?
Well, I did do a spirit doodling workshop, so I'm starting those. But a lot of people who come are artists.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say someone out there, you've never tried this, you think it's silly. I guess you might think that. I would say just as best time is if you're listening to anything on the internet, you know.
Or on television.
Television is hard because you're watching. But if you're listening on the internet to a conference, or say, if you're in business, I think for business people, it would be incredible. But so if you're sitting on a conference call in business and you're kind of bored, just take out a piece of paper. It'd be better if it didn't have lines, but lines are good because you can have a lot of fun with the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a nice sharp pen. I use Sharpies, Sharpie pens, very simple. And then just try to start making some lines and drawing something on the paper.
That you don't know.
Anything.
Yeah.
Anything. Start with a circle. Start with a square if you can't start with anything. It doesn't matter. Start with three or four lines.
Mm-hmm.
Let your hand just do some abstract lines, you know, that have no meaning at all. And then if you can, just continue doing it and do not pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big thing. Do not put your attention to it. put aside the mind. It would start saying, look at what I'm doing. This is stupid. This is silly. You just put that aside. No, it doesn't matter. And just keep on going. I always say just keep on doodling. And, you know, you might not finish it that first time. You might start and keep it next to you somewhere next to your computer. And whenever you find that boredom or you're talking to someone and you just want to do it, just continue on it. Mm. Continue on it for 4 or 5 days.
You know, this really fits in with the essence of creativity. I mean, all the great artists and poets, painters, they've all said, I don't know where this stuff comes from. I mean, Bob Dylan, I was reading his biography and said, these songs just come into my head and I write them down.
Right.
And we're sort of tapping into that space that you are now saying to me. I mean, I sort of knew it, but you talking about it made me realize how close that space is, that space of pure being. There's a sense of pure being when you're doodling and not thinking. I mean, all the enlightened teachers say, get to the place of no mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're saying, just pick up a pen and draw.
Well, I do say you have to be able to observe that critical mind and just put it aside.
Right, of course.
And keep on going. Because one thing about it is, it is very much like what the enlightened teachers write about. For example, there is no wrong doodle.
Right, you can't make a mistake.
No, you cannot make a mistake. In fact, if your pen slips, like say you're messy and I get a dot somewhere off my paper, my God, I just keep on going and it turns into something amazing. And also the doodle, it fulfills itself.
What do you mean?
It just, when you look down, you go like, oh, I don't know, is this done? Like, is it done? Is it not done? What is it? What am I doing? What's going on? If you just keep on going, then you'll just know. It will just fulfill itself. It's like life. If we don't control it, they say it fulfills itself. It is perfect in itself. And, you know, I have never done a doodle that's not perfect.
Mm.
I have never done a doodle that I don't feel is perfect. It's just, they're all different.
Mm.
Oh, here's another thing. This is amazing. You will not believe this. The state that you're in, or the situation I'm in, does not affect the doodles. What I'm saying is, no, not in my experience. People can try this out.
Oh, I mean, you could be having some dramas in your life.
What I'm saying is I could be doodling in a situation that's very intense. There's a lot of emotions going on inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could be doodling in a situation where I'm very happy and I'm with good friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
The doodle does not know.
I mean, in that state, you're not concerned with the external world in that way.
Yeah, what I'm saying is the place where the doodle is coming from and the doodle itself is not touched by those emotions.
So you're saying this is our pure state.
That's amazing.
That's the spiritual part, because I was going to ask you what's spiritual about doodling, but you're saying it when we come to this pure state, that is the state of our spiritual awakening.
Well, that's what happened to me. I started doing this and I go, people would say, well, you know, what kind of state were you when you doodled here? And I began to watch whether I was with my mother in a very difficult situation, or I said with friends, and I'd see what I'm interested, where it's coming from is not touched by that. It's just flowing out. It's always flowing.
You should get satsangs on doodling. Huh? You know, satsang, doodling satsang. You know, you write in here about satsang. Becoming like a child. I mean, there is that child state in your book. You say
that's why children love to do it. I have it in my children's classes, in Spirit Club. You know, when the children see me do it, the children want the book. One child cried so hard she wanted her mother to get this book. And it's a book. And in this book are the greatest sages writing about no mind.
Right.
And this
little
girl is like 4 years old. I want the spirit doodle book.
Right. You say the Upanishads, once you found it, you are free. This state of no mind. I mean, this.
Yes. In the book, here's the thing. When we did the book, Ellen and I, we didn't know what to put in writing. We thought we could put quotes because we love spirituality. We have, spiritual quotes.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't want to lead people. We didn't want them to think the quote is like the doodle, like this is about a bird. Because that's a Rorschach test, you know. That's the person looking. So
no, there's not a direct association between the quotes and the
state. No.
Right.
The quotes just point to the state. Everything that people have said about that state of no mind. And it actually, I mean, the things that are said, you know, here's another thing that's said that, it's so true. Like when you're doodling and you really get into it, that mind kind of slows down. You start feeling very nice with yourself. You feel like a very delicate quality with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like you feel like your own preciousness. like a sense of like intimacy.
You feel intimacy like, with yourself. When you've done a great doodle. When you
When you're doodling and you're really just letting it, just being in it, all of a sudden it's just like you feel at home, like you feel so good with yourself. Like it's a sense of like being like very intimate.
Actually, I have had that experience. Yeah. It feels very good. It's like I'm sitting comfortably in myself.
Right.
So I wonder why we just can't live in that state and take that doodling state into the world of our everyday life. Is that
I think it affects us. I think as we experience that more, and if for me, it affects me tremendously. Yeah. It has affected me tremendously. I mean, everywhere I go, I consider that. I consider that when I'm getting all identified with a situation, when I'm being pulled into an emotional quality in some life situation. It does affect us. And I think it's like meditation. Mm. The more time you spend there, the more time you can, you know, access that, the more it can become more available.
Well, I think the importance of this book, and you can use this as a blurb, the importance of this book is you've made us conscious of the benefits of this no mind activity. You've just made a distinction, and from there, I think that can change society. You know, that can change the world. It can change our lives to know that we are that state is in us, and we don't have to go searching in ashrams with gurus and sitting for, you know, weeks and months on end doing a mantra. It's just, we are that state. We are the purity of that state, and it, what you're saying here and what I'm getting, it's so immediate, because I've been doing it my whole life, but discounting it.
Right. Well, that's what they say. We discount our true nature. Neglect it. Mm. Like it's just a question of putting some attention into it, shifting our attention to something, to a new reality.
That's why it is like that. It is. You've given us a new reality of awareness based on your experience and this valuable understanding. I think if people realize their true nature was so immediate right there, it could shift spirituality in a fundamental way. It's not like we have to look for spirituality or anything else outside of ourselves.
So much around us.
There's nothing outside of ourselves.
Right.
The doodle actually takes us into ourselves.
And you said, what is this book going to tell people how to doodle? It's not very complicated, but the book will certainly tell them some things and inspire them. And of course, we're going to have the website. You know, we have the website.
Spiritdoodling.com.
Yes, spiritdoodling.com.
Right.
And we're going to have a journal, and people can make their own spirit doodle book. They can make their own entire book with these quotes in it. And the quotes are beautiful. They're my favorite teachers and special people.
Like Adyashanti, you write in here, you quote him saying, thought cannot comprehend what is beyond thought.
Yeah, thought cannot comprehend what is beyond thought.
Mm-hmm. It can't comprehend it, but, you know, when you're doodling, you're not thinking.
Well, the thinking is somewhere else. It's doing it. Sometimes. Now, I can sit down and doodle without putting my attention into something else. But I feel at the beginning, it's really good for people to get in a conference, some conference call or some lecture, and just doodle on the side and stop and then doodle the next day again. And don't even look down at it. Don't pay attention to it, because the worst thing we can do is to put too much attention on the product. We want to keep the attention on the state to begin
on
with.
On the state.
Yes, on the experience.
The actual activity of the state.
Yeah, like something is watching. Something is there present all the time.
And that's us.
Yes.
That's who we are.
Yeah. So the minute we shift our attention and say, oh, what a beautiful picture. I think I'll make $1 million.
Well, you're also quite Einstein in here, who was quite a mystic. He says, the intuitive mind is a sacred gift and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift.
Yeah, the gift is that state, and the servant is the product.
It's the gift is who we are. The intuitive mind is our connection to all things. And so maybe we should do like week-long doodling marathons.
The workshops, really, they're very wonderful. People really, they fall into that space very, very quickly, and it's very beautiful. But it's great speaking to you because you just get this so much that I
get it. I do it. And you've helped me now honor a part of my own experience.
I couldn't be happier.
And is what do you have written there? Do you want to read some of this?
No, that's fine.
And then
I
was going to go get Ron if you wanted to read this part. Why don't you just read this part? This part. And is that good?
Sure.
And then I'll just get our next guest. But you read that.
Sure. Doodling or art? When people see me doodling, they often ask, "What am I doing?" Well, I'll just say, when people see me doodling, they ask me what I'm doing, and I say I'm doodling, and then they say, "Oh no, that's not doodling, that's art." And they said that over and over again, and so I began to think about that: is it art? And I think it is art, because I think art does come from that source. So I think doodling is art. I think art is doodling. I think art does come from the no-mind source. And and all artists, as Alan was saying, do create from that source. And it was really actually hard for me to call myself an artist till I realized where it was coming from. Then I could call myself an artist, because before that, there's an artist that's a person, a personality, and that's not the same thing.
Thank you, Victoria. Okay. Well, the only thing that I have to say about art and doodling is that, again, it's about not the end result, it's about the process.
Exactly.
Thank you. This is a beautiful book. I recommend it to everyone listening, Spirit Doodling, spiritdoodling.com. And that was Victoria Friedman. And it's also, the subtitle is called The Effortless Expression of No Mind. So, And then introducing our next guest is a little blurb on the back of the book, which is by Ron Friedman, who is associated with Victoria Friedman and an artist and poet in his own right. And he writes about this book: "No mind's a place where things are born, flowers designed and doodles form, where patterns considered unrefined are all harmonized to a discerning soul delight, where ego's foothold at last gives way and finally bows down to creativity's loving play. So, dear reader, join these dancing patterns of light and on these pages find evidence of no mind's silent might." That's Ron talking about the book that we were just discussing here.
Yes.
Thanks, Ron. And, you know, Victoria has the visual aspect of creativity, and I think she really understands that sense of transcendence in that art form. But you've had a different experience of transcendence with this poetry you're writing.
Very much so. The poetry, I think, comes exactly from the same place as the doodles come from.
From the place of no mind.
The place of no mind. From a place where I think all creativity comes from, ultimately.
How do you describe no mind? I mean, if it's possible, because we are always using our minds to describe, and how would you...
You know, I could read you a poem for every question that you have.
Okay.
I'm not going to do
that. Oh, okay.
Maybe just a few of them, but I think there is a place where we come to if we turn our curiosity inwardly about our own process, and if we follow it to its source, as Eastern mysticism has been telling us forever, we come to a place where the mind can go no further. It reaches what it calls darkness.
The mind reaches darkness.
Yes. But that's the place where we are beyond. We are that place beyond the mind that labels it as darkness, but in fact it's a source from where the entire universe was created. And it's our community with our creator.
I mean, you've spent the last 20 or so years developing creative collective communities. And
yeah, that's really my passion.
Yeah, and it's been beautiful. I've witnessed these creations, or some of them. And has it come from the same place when you're working collectively as well?
Oh, absolutely. Our passion, my passion, Victoria's passion, has been this nonprofit foundation where we explore and we want to bring into consciousness the incredible potential of people working together.
Mm-hmm.
When their intention is aligned, mm-hmm. their vision is aligned. Mm-hmm. And I think something happens. And we need to become more conscious of what it is that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Something really does join us. I think Christ's statement, where two or more are gathered,
yeah.
in my name, there am I.
The name being the state beyond the personality.
Yes, I think it's, you can call it by a thousand different names, mm-hmm. Christ consciousness. You can call it the quantum froth.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
But something happens in a gathering like that, which we feel is an opening up of a different form of communication among human beings. And that form of communication, we feel, also will be necessary for humanity to have a chance to survive.
You know, it's really interesting talking with you and Victoria, and also being in the space for a few days. I get the sense from both of you that that space is so much more important than the personal dramas that most people are concerned with. And I'm just getting that now. And I think it's true of me in a way, too. It's like we all have our little dramas, you know, but then there's this other thing that we've dedicated ourselves to that is far more interesting and exciting and unknown and human. You know, Krishnamurti said to be human is to be free from the known.
That's right. I think that's the great adventure. We're all, those of us who respond to doodles, to poetry, to the teachings, all of these, we're on this journey. And your journey, new realities.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I don't know. I have no idea.
You're doing the same.
I am, yeah. I am doing the same. And I'm, you know, and I'm pursuing people who are of like mind to confirm what I'm doing, you know, and like to support each other in this. I don't know if I would call it awakening, but I guess it is a sort of awakening to this place where poetry comes from.
Yeah. The thing that's so interesting to me, one of the most exciting things about the poetry is how it happened, how closely it was connected with a group process.
Uh-huh.
Because what happened was I had written some small articles for some local papers.
Right.
But I didn't like writing because no matter what I would put down on paper, my mind would get in the way by projecting myself as the harshest critic of what was being written. And so after suffering with getting these articles out, I asked some friends of mine who are in this group work that we do, using a process we call sponsorship. And I asked them, I said, can you give me a suggestion of an effort I can make to break through this limitation?
Great.
And when we do that, and I would love people to know more about this kind of I would call it an archetypal ritual of asking another for help.
Yeah.
But the other is really a projection of your own higher self. So it's not their wisdom you're looking for. It's the agreement that they enter into you, into this process, where you ask because you have reached a dead end. They say, because you ask in sincerity, we will respond. We will take that role. And
you asked in sincerity.
I asked this way.
And you asked to someone in the group that you
who has done this work, although it doesn't have to be. And they gave me this instruction of just sit down before the computer and just write anything and don't look at it again. And I did this for about 3 weeks. And at the end of the 3 weeks, the poetry started coming in a torrent. It just came one after another. It would wake me up from sleep, saying, now get up, write this, because wonderful, beautiful words and images would form.
Just come into your mind.
Just coming in like that. And I felt there had to be a responsibility and a gratitude for the gift.
Right.
So I would get up at any time. It particularly was effective at times between waking up and sleeping.
Right, when you're so
in that in-between state?
Yeah.
Or late at night when I was exhausted.
When you're so exhausted. So that happens to me. It's like it just comes. Like the mind lets go of its structure.
Right.
And allows these new ways.
No mind. It allows mind. Let's go to allow no mind to express itself.
Yeah.
And that's what happens in these poems. One after another, they're all about the spiritual journey. Mm-hmm. That's what they're about.
Well, let's hear one about the spiritual journey, because I'm excited by that.
This one is called Good Advice. Mm-hmm. Listen, dear reader, make friends with space. It will prove to be a worthwhile endeavor. Everything that we try to nail into its sublime emptiness and maintain by the frantic repetitions of a lifetime, who we are, those we love, sunsets and snowfalls, doing and choosing, all these finally find no hold in the vastness, flutter loose and dissolve into nothingness, leaving us with the impenetrable reality of a new relationship.
To space itself. You know, listening to you actually reminds me of my father, who was a poet. He was a businessman, but he spent a lot of time writing poetry. And one of the great poems that he wrote that he loved was called Problems and Pain. He said, "Problems and pain ain't the only game in town. Did you ever look around? Have you ever seen a peach preach or an apple ever grapple with a grape?
That's beautiful.
Humankind, does your mind make sense of nonsense or does it not, leaving problems and pain as your lot?"
Beautiful.
And so it's like you are like presenting to me, for me, the kind of archetypal father identification. I mean, you are who you are, but I'm just saying from my psyche, I'm getting that download of that connection through my own personal experience to a source. And it's the same source that's coming through you that's writing these poems that or is connecting me to another part of myself. So, and that's the purpose of art, through association and create meaning. It means we give it.
And it relates really, these poems, you know, poetry, I've realized a lot about poetry. I'm very interested in the very process of poetry. But poetry is really about forming a relationship with the listener. And it's a very vulnerable relationship because it's no different than any other real relationship. You're asking the listener to become vulnerable and open to your closest images.
Well, do you read Whitman's Song of Myself? He says, "Lay and loaf with me, and what I sense, you shall sense." You know, it's a song of myself. It's just like you are experiencing with the poet himself. It's like the way mirror neurons work. You know, we having the same experience because the way the words flow into us is giving us a sense of a reality.
That's right. That's right. Actually, everything we talk about has a poem.
No, I love that. But read me another poem, but I also want to quote this thing by Williams, Carlos Williams, I think, who said, "Poetry is news that stays news."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know, so it's this nature of the ultimate reality is where you're writing your poetry from. This stays fresh every time you read it.
You know, I have a poem about, I have many poems about poetry.
Yeah, okay.
One of them is, these poems are like Tibetan prayer flags. Soul sentinels fluttering in the wind, releasing their substance bit by bit into vast unknown spaces.
I think I'll print that on my website if you don't mind. I like that.
That relates completely to what you're talking about.
Yeah. Bit by bit by, what say that?
Bit by bit, releasing their substance bit by bit into vast, unknown spaces.
Mm. There's something that poetry captures about the eternal experience of consciousness. It's why Rumi is the, you know, biggest selling poet in America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this, yes. Sufi who lived, you know, 800 years ago is reminding people now of this spiritual awakening that's happening, because that's a timeless dimension.
It is indeed. And actually, I'm fascinated by the crossing point mm-hmm. between prose and poetry,
mm-hmm.
where prose cannot really contain the actual experience in the moment. It must introduce a rhythmic element
mm-hmm.
and feeling, of course,
yeah.
dwells in that rhythmic element.
Yeah. It's the feeling. I mean, I'm taking some voice lessons in speaking clear, and this teacher I have, Lynn Singer, who's a great teacher, says that it's emotion that's communicated in the vowels.
Right.
And intent is communicated in the consonants.
Yes, structure.
So the two together give you a powerful emotional experience when it's pronounced in that flow, and it can sink deeper into our consciousness. That's why songs are not so much about the words. The words carry the essence of the meaning with the melody into a deeper part of ourselves. That's why.
Yes, I speak of poetry as a silent sonar.
Mm. Silence. I think it was T.S. Eliot who called it the raid on the articulate or the inarticulate. The raid on the inarticulate.
Yes, it's like it sends out a sonar,
mm-hmm.
an invisible realm. Like,
and it hits us.
And it hits you, and then you,
mm-hmm.
without realizing,
mm-hmm.
can only respond as a poet
mm-hmm.
to the poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, this is what Rumi does. You know, he hits us
mm-hmm.
deep inside our conscience. And then the feeling that emerges is our response. We become poets at the moment that we respond to poetry.
Mm-hmm.
But the really, I think the thing...
I like that. Yeah, okay. The thing that...
But the thing I really feel about the poetry is that every human being...
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I can end up by reading one poem.
No, read a few. Yeah, we have some time.
Every human being has a talent, which is God-given.
Right. It's their dharma. It's why they come here.
It's really why. They wait. And I'll read you a poem called Emergence.
Mm-hmm.
It waits. It waits to express itself.
Mm-hmm.
And in the group work that we do, an aspect of it that is so crucial is how, when we are together, we can enhance each other's creativity.
Mm. How do we do that?
Oh, this is the whole experiment we've had with our theater group.
Right.
You know, Voice Point. And Voice Point has, you know, has had many, many, many performances, including at the United Nations, of Rumi's
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing this kind of work, people use, they are asked to go beyond their limits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we do it together. And things that we would not ordinarily do by ourselves, we are given the courage to go further and to find our own creative word.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to read you this.
Do that. And I think we'll even play, if I can get some, I'll play some of the Rumi music or the words that you and put to music with your foundation, which is the Vistar Foundation. Ron and Victoria Friedman are the founders of the Vistar Foundation, and they've created this music group called Voice Point, where they put the words of Rumi's poetry to music. They were beautiful songs. But yeah, we'll maybe end with some of your music from Voice Points, but... Yes, go ahead.
All right. This one is called Emergence.
Mm-hmm.
All that lies stored up within, one day it must have its expression. Gathering force in silence, it awaits the promised moment, its gestation over into a new birth. We, poor caretakers of this divine child, the gifted extract of everything we have loved, watch it finally emerge to be known. Its appearance astonishing, its bearer transformed. It witnesses transformation itself. Do not seek to calm that which grows within and yet has no voice. Do not obstruct the soul's muted reach for that which it has not yet named. Be patient with its ceaseless request, and come to know yourself as the parent of how everything is born.
The parent. So the parent of how everything is born is coming from that place of no mind.
It is no mind working through you, and you are the experience. You are the vehicle for which creation is happening.
And that's all we are. And that's what we are.
And that's what we want more than anything.
And it's who we are. The illusion is that we're not that. The personality, the dramas, all that gets in the way of thinking that we're not life living itself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it's the expression of that authenticity for you. It may be new realities, that exploration.
Yeah, it's an exploration.
Whatever it is, for each one of us, there is something which is authentic and perfectly satisfying. Mm-hmm. It needs no corroboration from the outer world. You know it, and you love it, and you are satisfied in its expression.
That sounded like a poem right there. Was that a poem? That sounded like a beautiful poem right there. Because it's, the thing about poetry that I think people like is it takes you beyond the logical mind and creates metaphors and puts things together that aren't logical, but that the mind must then drop away in order to comprehend. Yeah. And we have to let go of logic to take in the essence of the poetry.
Real feeling has its own logic. It is irrefutable.
Right. It's like a couple of great poets that I knew. There's no reason in longing, only tears. That's one poem. That was a woman that I
went
to college.
Poem.
And oh yeah, and thank you. I'll show you the whole thing.
Yeah, send it.
I'll send that to you. But there's also another poem that E. Cummings said. How does he go? I love E. Cummings as an American poet.
I do too.
He says, "May my heart stroll about hungry and thirsty, and may it always be Sunday, for whenever men are right, they are not young. May my heart know the secrets that the birds sing." You know?
Yes.
It's like because it stretches us beyond what we, the regularity and the logic that we think in the world that we've been trapped by, and stretches us into the feelings, like you're saying. It takes us beyond ourselves.
I think in the end, I think great poetry brings us back in contact with ourselves.
Mm. Yeah, it is ourselves. This poem you have there, The Love's Journey, that looks kind of interesting.
Oh, this is my Sufi nature comes out in these poems.
So Sufi was a big part of your...
Rumi, Hafiz, Rilke.
I love Rilke.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and Kabir and all those. Those are my mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Love's Journey. The sun does not say to the earth, "I need you, come closer." Venus does not say to Mars, "Let's kiss."
Mm-hmm.
And Neptune does not say to Mercury, "I need a hug, hot stuff." Love's enfoldment is not capricious. By some unwritten law, it invites every opposition to its own fulfillment. Thus purified, it sees its object purified, cleansed of every barrier that blocked its radiant sight. My love for you has become immortal, free of space and time's bondage. It has befriended a welcoming vastness, which it now calls home.
When Rumi talks about you, he's talking about the essence of that divine.
The beloved.
Which is the divine in us.
Yes.
Thank you. Are you putting these together in a book, or you have a website that people can...
I will have a website. I'm putting it together in a book. Mm-hmm. And I just want to share. Poetry is for sharing.
It is. It is for sharing. And I've been talking to Ron Friedman, and he also is the creator of this group called Voice Point. And let me go out with this first song, Come, Come, Come. That's the first...
That's a reading. Why don't you try with I Am What I Am?
I Am What I Am, song number 8. Is there anything you want to say about this?
Well, this is my favorite, really, because this is... Whenever I hear this... Mm-hmm. sung, I start slowly turning, first within, and then my body starts moving in a circle, because it is so much a statement, Rumi's statement of identity, what we are.
And you helped create this.
Everyone created it.
Everyone in the group created this.
This is a group creative process. Every word, every movement, every sound was created through this incredible creative potential of working together.
And the original English is by Coleman Barks, who is...
Translation, yes.
Translation, who is probably the finest or the most popular translator. And he did something to Rumi's poetry where he made it so accessible.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and more than Robert Bly and the other people who have come before him, he revolutionized Rumi for the American mind. And he did it in such a beautiful way that people... are now inspired. Deepak Chopra put together 2 albums based on the poetry of Rumi, you know? So okay. Well, thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Alan.
Thank you. Tonight, I've been talking to Ron Friedman and earlier to Victoria Friedman of the VistarFoundation.org. You can look them up. They also are teachers in the New York area and actually around the country of creativity and being and presence and authenticity of ourselves, and they, we've just talked about 2 forms tonight, poetry and doodling, drawing, that inspire the creative spirit in us all. So I'm going to leave you with this little piece called, what is it? Only Breath.
I Am.
Oh, I Am What I Am.
What I Am. Only Breath is a little bit longer.
Oh, Only Breath is another song. I Am What I Am. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and email me at newrealities@earthlink.net or check my website, newrealities.com. Thank you for listening.
Circling inside.